Welcome back, you with Truth News Radio. Well, I'd like to talk to you about the role of conspiracist ideation and worldviews in predicting the rejection of science. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the title of a research article authored by one Stefan Lewandowski, among others, which has quite a bizarre goal. It is trying to correlate beliefs about various controversial issues with what the authors of the study term conspiracist thinking versus free market thinking. I'll just read to you from the abstract and then I'll make a few comments about it. Among American conservatives, but not liberals, trust in science has been declining since the 1970s. Climate science has become particularly polarized, with conservatives being more likely than liberals to reject the notion that greenhouse gas emissions are warming the globe. Conversely, opposition to genetically modified foods and vaccinations is often ascribed to the political left, although reliable data are lacking. There are also growing indications that rejection of science is suffused by a conspiracist ideation, that is, the general tendency to endorse conspiracy theories, including the specific beliefs that inconvenient scientific findings constitute a hoax. It says here that the team conducted a propensity-weighted internet panel survey of the US population. And apparently the study shows that conservatism and free market worldview strongly predict a rejection of climate science, in contrast to their weaker and opposing effects on the acceptance of vaccinations. The two worldview variables do not predict opposition to genetically modified foods. Conspiracy ideation, by contrast, predicts rejection of all three scientific propositions, albeit to greatly varying extents. Greater endorsement of a diverse set of conspiracy theories predicts opposition to GM foods, vaccinations, and climate science. Wow, that's quite a mouthful, isn't it? I'll just let that sink in for a bit. You might be kind of reeling from the mental convolutions that that paragraph has just put you through. I mean, there are so many undefined constructs in there, of course, aren't there? But let's just jump to the conclusions and then I'll give you my conclusions. It says here, free market worldviews are an important predictor of the rejection of scientific findings that have potential regulatory implications, such as climate science, but not necessarily of other scientific issues. Conspiracist ideation, by contrast, is associated with the rejection of all scientific propositions tested. We highlight the manifold cognitive reasons why conspiracist ideation would stand in opposition to the scientific method. The involvement of conspiracist ideation in the rejection of science has implications for science communicators. Well, I bet it does. You know, I bet it does, folks. I mean, if you're a science communicator and you've got some sort of conspiracist in the class, oh dear, you know, what are you going to do? It's like we're going to have to train our teachers now to deal with this, to nip it in the bud, huh? And you've got to look for these conspiracist ideation patterns. And there you go. Now, this is where it gets a little bit tricky for formulation of policy, isn't it? Because conspiracist ideation isn't actually really defined, oddly. I'm pretending to be surprised by that. What I'd actually like to do is jump to the part of the article where it says that the manifold cognitive reasons why conspiracist ideation would stand in opposition to the scientific method. That should be fun. Okay, it says here, the prominence of conspiracist ideation in science rejection is not unexpected in light of its cognitive attributes. For example, if a scientific consensus cannot be accepted as the result of researchers converging independently on the same evidence-based view, then the belief in a scientific conspiracy can provide an alternative explanation for the consensus. Moreover, because conspiracist ideation need not conform to the criteria of consistency and coherence that characterize scientific reasoning, its explanatory reach is necessarily greater than that of competing scientific theories. Conspiracist ideation is also typically immune to falsification because contradictory evidence, e.g. climate scientists being exonerated of accusations, can be accommodated by broadening the scope of the conspiracy. Exonerations are a whitewash, often with considerable creativity. Those cognitive attributes render conspiracist ideation ideally suited for the ongoing rejection of scientific evidence. Notwithstanding the growing prominence of conspiracist ideation in science denial, broad-based empirical data on its role are lacking. Our study, therefore, also probed conspiracist ideation. Now, of course, I probably need not even say that this is clearly a piece of polemical, political writing masquerading as science. What we have here is this article published in a scientific journal, which is actually a political diatribe, masquerading, wearing the gown and the garb of science. Oh, look at us. We're examining these people. We're examining these climate skeptics. We're examining these conspiracists. And guess what? We find all these correlations. Isn't that interesting? But there are some interesting things to point out about it, above and beyond the fact that the people who wrote it are shameless, pathetic, narcissistic clowns, if I may be so bold as to say. What I would like to emphasize is some interesting points. One being that, yes, there is actually a correlation between those who respect a free market view and those who question policy-driven, greater good arguments. You know, we have to do this for the greater good. We have to make all these difficult sacrifices for the greater good. And that applies to vaccines, it applies to climate change, it applies to the war on terror, doesn't it? And free market libertarians generally don't go along with any of those things. And, you know, whether it's actually a situation where the government is saying we've got to protect you from some terrible threat, or whether it's saying that we've got to make everything run this way and we've got to regulate it for the greater good so we get a good outcome, the libertarian looks at it from a point of view of respecting the basic principle of human freedom, the basic principle that people have a right to choose their own destinies. And that's what people like Stefan Lewandowski, Gilles E. Gignac, and Klaus Oberauer, authors of this article, are vehemently opposed to. They are part of a war against human freedom. They are statists. But their prejudice and their agenda is never openly admitted. It's always implied, but never acknowledged. Of course, there is a reason why libertarians reject many measures which are presented to us as being for the greater good. Of course, there are some situations where we all recognize that we should do something for the greater good. I'm not throwing that out. Libertarians won't throw that out completely. But we must always be vigilant that argument can also be used for the greater power of the controllers, the greater power of the oligarchies. And has been so often in history, going back centuries and millennia, that you know, the oligarchies have always framed their power in the sense that it is the best way to run the world, and we know best, and we're actually taking care of you. So when we come to specific examples, such as climate policy, the questions about whether there is a carbon dioxide effect on the climate and whether that is human-induced, they're all valid questions. But the question about what do we do about this, when it comes down to enforcing some sort of collective action, you've got to be extremely cautious. And again, I'm not saying throw it out completely. There might be situations where there is a real threat. Imagine if we were going to be hit by an asteroid or something. There might be something we all needed to do, right? But then you'd have to explain that very clearly. It'd have to be very clear, wouldn't it? Extreme situations, extreme changes to law, extreme measures require extreme proof. And those in the libertarian communities who oppose climate change legislation have simply stated that we don't see there's enough proof there. You're just using the greater good argument. You've got to do this to save the world. Oh, it's the end of the world if you don't do it. But the priests of this religion, when they garb themselves in the gowns of science and they produce a study that then wants to lump all these different disparate people, say people who oppose vaccines, people who are concerned about the lies of climate change, people who don't believe that the 9/11 attacks occurred as we've been told, they want to then conflate a class of people who are called conspiracists. But where it gets most absurd is when they talk about the denial of science, because the people who I look up to and the ones that are the key players in reevaluating climate science, vaccines, what really happened on 9/11, the war on terror, you know, many of these people are actually scientists. Many of these people are rigorously trained, highly intelligent, and actually adhere to the principles of scientific research and observation and hypothesis. Whereas these clowns who wrote this article, they basically project upon you, they lay down upon you some completely undefined terminologies about a conspiracist ideation, you know, conspiracist mindset, without ever actually taking the trouble to define what that is. I mean, these people are just crooks. And all we can do is point it out. All we can do is expose it. We can't use their tactics. We can't use the thug gangster tactics that they use, because then we'd be just like them, wouldn't we? You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great talking to you today. I'll be back after this break with my guest, Gabriel Phillips Short, to talk about child abuse and the most horrendous things that occurred under care in Australia. Very important. Do stay with us.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It is great to have your company today. And it is great to be able to do this show, I have to say, although it's a challenge, you know, but it feels good every time I'm able to get some original material, to talk to someone fresh, and just make that little bit of difference to the world. And the guest I have today is doing the same thing herself. Her name's Gabrielle Phillips Short, and she's been on my show before. She's been speaking out to expose the institutionalized abuse of children, of which she herself was a victim, over several decades at various institutions. And she's an incredibly brave person, and I just want to say welcome to the show, Gabrielle.
Thanks, Howard. Nice to be here, and thanks for allowing me to come back on the show and speak on this very important topic, and that is the Forgotten Australians.
Absolutely.
Survivors of the orphanages, children's homes and foster care throughout Australia during the last century.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Gabrielle, Gabrielle, I've been reading the transcript of your speech at the inquiry, which is currently being held in Victoria, the parliamentary inquiry, and I have to say it was one of the most shocking things I've ever read. And I've spoken to you before, but the information you revealed in your speech before the inquiry was just unbelievable. I mean, this just looks like black site, Abu Ghraib, Nazi, you name it. I mean, it is a form. What you've described and what you've talked about is torture, is abuse. It is equivalent to the worst type of abuse that occurs in prisons. And I think in many ways, you and the other victims were like prisoners.
We were, yes, exactly. And also too, we were only children. We weren't grown adults. Our bones were still growing. You know, I mean, we were constantly living in fear, Herwood, day in and day out. You know, there was no escape, no one to turn to.
I mean, you've said here that you were repeatedly beaten with various instruments on your hands, on your face, in ways that were both painful and also deeply humiliating.
Yes.
And this was being done by sisters in the major period of time that you spent there in the sister with the Sisters of Nazareth. This was done by Christians. I find that incredible.
Yeah, well, I don't anymore, because to me, you know, when it comes to the Christian religion, I'm not saying all Christians are like that, but a lot of people hide behind Christianity and they get away with a lot of things. And I mean, you know, look at the priests, you know, or the clergy, you know, look at all the pedophilia that's been going on, and they have been getting away with it because they're Christians. You know, it's just, yeah, we were beaten on a day-to-day basis, and we weren't just beaten by one nun, because we actually had three nuns in charge of us at the time, and one would come on duty, the other one would go off. So we could cop two or three beltings in one day.
Yes, and
we lived in a constant state of fear, adrenaline just running around our bodies all the time. It really was like living in a war zone. You know, we were in fear of our lives.
It is. I mean, what you've described reminds me of the accounts I've heard of prisoners who've been, you know, captured in wartime, you know, and tortured and interrogated and abused and degraded. As we've seen, you know, this has obviously come out a lot in the last few years after Afghanistan and Iraq and, of course, Guantanamo Bay. But of course, there are worse things than anything that we've ever heard happen. But what I find interesting is that it all seems to be a very similar type of pattern. It seems to be a pattern of people in power who just get a little bit carried away with the fact that they have vulnerable, powerless people in their charge who can do nothing about it. And they seem to just get carried away with their own little power game. I mean, what's your take on that?
Well, well, to be honest, I actually think a lot of these people were actually mentally insane, mentally disturbed themselves, and maybe that's why a lot of them became nuns, that they themselves couldn't fit into the outside world, so they joined the church and were put in these places. And you know what, I don't really understand it, Herwood. I don't understand how these so-called brides of Christ can treat little children the way they did. You know, and it's true, we were prisoners because we had nowhere to go. No one to turn to. You know, they didn't say to us, okay, here's your rights, read them, let us know if anything goes wrong or you've got any complaints. We weren't given our rights. We were just locked away, cut off from the outside world, and that was all we knew. We didn't know any different, you know, and it wasn't until years later when I left that home and I went to another home which wasn't quite so bad that I realised how bad that place was, Nazareth House, you know, and the cruelty. And I was so used to being beaten and bashed, it was hard for me to adapt to the next home. You know, I was so nervous all the time, and I would twitch and think somebody was coming up behind me to bat me across the face. And, oh, it's taken me years to overcome the panic attacks. And I was talking to a doctor one day, because I'm not so bad now, but I was suffering really bad from panic attacks, and he was trying to explain to me that what happens is when you're living in a constant state of fear, you know, for a long period of time, it's like the chemistry gets put out of whack. I can't remember his exact words. It's like the chemistry system gets put out of whack. And even though the danger's disappeared, you're still, you know, in that constant state of vigilance.
Well, I think this is...
havoc on your health.
I think, and this is sometimes called post-traumatic stress disorder, Gabriel.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's
you know, and
yeah.
Then your system starts to break down in many ways, and particularly the immune system. And, you know, I was very sick for probably a good 20 years, and I can't believe I'm still here. But it's not just me. This is on a massive scale. I mean, there were 500,000 children raised in these orphanages throughout the last century across Australia. And, you know, it wasn't just me that got belted. I also witnessed other children. So that in itself caused a lot of fear.
Absolutely.
And we were just terrified. We were just... I mean, I always felt like I was white in the face and, you know, we'd be trembling. We'd just... Oh, it's really hard to explain.
I mean, just for our audience here, I mean, you've described people having their heads slammed together, children having their heads slammed together. You've described the sisters dragging you around by the arms to the point where your arms become dislocated. You've talked about one of these charming women walking around with a spoon and whacking you on the head while you're eating. And striking you on the knuckles when you're extremely cold, and forcing you to stand outside in the extreme cold while you're cold, and then hold your hands out to be struck on the knuckles, and you said that quite often you didn't even know why you were being beaten. Often it appeared to be done for no reason at all.
Yeah. Well, see, sometimes something would happen, or they'd think somebody stole something. So they'd line us all up, and if nobody dobbed somebody in, we would all cop it. Sometimes it might have been visitors had come that day and we didn't smile enough, because we were actually told we had to smile, we were dressed up, you know, we had to put on a good show. And if we failed in that way, once the visitors were gone, we were lined up in the passage or outside in the courtyard. And we just copped it. It just was ongoing. It never seemed to stop, and there was always something that we were actually being beaten for.
You've also described being locked in a broom cupboard for days on end.
Yeah, under the stairs. Yeah, that was a common punishment at Nazareth House.
Solitary confinement.
And, sometimes you'd be under there for a couple of days, Herwood. And occasionally...
Gabriel, we're going to break. Sorry, I have to interrupt you. We're going to break, Gabriel. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to have your company today. We'll be right back. Please don't go away. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. My guest today, Gabriel Phillips Short, is a warrior for the sanctity and the protection of children, and she is a person who speaks out. She's gone before the parliamentary inquiry in Victoria, which has been seeing a lot of people. There's a lot of testimony, and I downloaded quite a number of those transcripts today, Gabriel, and to see what other people were saying. And I've seen that your story is corroborated by many other people in different institutions. One of the most shocking ones I saw there was the man who was with the Franciscans, who I believe spoke on the same day you did. But he described absolutely brutal beatings that he endured from the Franciscans, who I had always thought were a very kind order. I know that they're based on the idea of, you know, chastity and poverty and all those great, you know, virtues or whatever. You know, I always thought the Franciscans are the good ones. They would never do such a thing.
No, well, to be honest, in every order, because you know how there's different orders of nuns, different orders of priests.
Indeed.
In every order, you will find a lot of bad ones. It doesn't matter which order.
Doesn't matter,
you know,
does it?
I mean, these people, I don't know, they obviously join the priesthood, the nunnery, for whatever reasons. I really don't know, but obviously something happens to them. Maybe they're brainwashed. Maybe they think, well, you know, we'll belt the devil out of them. Who knows? You know, I mean, like I said, I really can't understand it all myself. And today, there are things still happening, even though those institutions have closed down, it's still happening in foster care, you know, like more so pedophilia than anything. You know, thank God they've closed these institutions down because that was happening en masse. That was, you know, hundreds of kids all at once.
Yes.
But it's still happening, and the church runs a lot of the foster care as well as the government. So, yeah, it's still happening. And these inquiries, I really don't know what they're going to bring out of it, because most of them already knew. We've got people on the commission who are part of these organisations, and yet, they are actually the commissioners. So, to
Indeed.
Me... They didn't speak out. They never spoke out. There's actually a commissioner on the board of the Royal Commission who is a layman high up in the Catholic Church. You know? So how... Oh,
indeed.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Sarah, I think there is one general outcome from this, and I think you highlighted it in the previous segment there when you were talking. You said that when you were growing up, you didn't know... that these were crimes that were being committed against you because you had no knowledge of the world. You didn't know. And this is the case for every child that's abused. Children come into the world as completely vulnerable, and they have to take for granted whatever happens to them. They think that's the way the world is. You know, a five-year-old can't stand up and say, that's against human rights. A five-year-old doesn't even know what human rights are.
No,
and this is the terrible
all we
thing.
Felt was that we were bad? That
yeah, of course. It. That's the way you internalize it, because as a child, as you're developing your ability to think and your ability to form a moral universe, you understand there's good and bad. And of course, you're always being told you're bad anyway. And if this is of course the part of the sick nature of people who abuse others, is that they try to portray the person they're abusing as bad. And this happens across the board. I mean, this happens with narcissistic people, with psychopaths, with serial killers, as much as with governments, as much as with police that have become carried away with their power and tyrannical regimes around the world. They always portray the oppressed as being worthless, bad garbage, and that then justifies anything they do. But of course, these people are themselves the sick ones. They are the ones that are bad. They are the ones that are the human garbage. But of course, they have to create an inverted moral universe where it looks like you're the bad one, and that then justifies them into in just just abusing and destroying your basic rights as a human being. But it was
all about control too.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, by putting the fear into us, especially the fear of the devil. See, we were religiously brainwashed as well, you know, particularly in the church institutions. So they also used a lot of that, like I call it spiritual abuse. I mean,
yeah.
They actually used that over us as well. So we'd go to bed at night thinking the devil was going to come and take our soul. So either way, we lived in fear night and day. You know, a lot of the kids in the homes couldn't sleep properly. You know, kids were getting up and down to go to the toilet because they were terrified of wetting the bed, or they were terrified the devil was going to get them. That place was one big nightmare. It was just, I mean, I don't even know how I'm, well, I think I'm sane. But, I don't know how I've stayed sane. Maybe it's because I was lucky I had some good people take me under, you know, their wing. But a lot of people left those homes. Oh, they're suffering real bad, Herwood. And there's no support systems in place. There is nothing, you know. So, and a lot of these people are now into middle age, older. Hell of a lot of committed suicide because they just could not cope with the outside world, couldn't fit into the world after being institutionalised for so many years.
Yeah.
They just decided to pull the plug.
Yeah, of course, that's one of the outcomes of this type of PTSD that people suffer. I mean, we've seen it in wars. We've seen it after many, many of the great wars that have been fought in the West over the past century, and of course, you were in a type of a war, and I would say, Gabriel, that what you experienced were war crimes. I mean, they would be under the Geneva Convention, they would be considered war crimes. The irony of that is that you weren't even an enemy combatant.
Exactly. Well, it was our own government going to war on us. When you think about it, you know, I mean, little children. Look, it's bad enough with adults, but little children, and I'm talking about babies too, 2, 3, 4-year-olds. I mean, I can remember as far back as to when I was 2, I can remember the odd thing, and I did put a memory that I had in my submission and also my speech at Parliament House. But I also remember seeing other babies getting swung around, pulled up by the hair. I still can hear those nuns screaming, but that feels to me like it's yesterday. I can handle it. I don't get all thing about it now. It's like I've learned to separate myself from it. But the thing is, you don't ever forget it. It is always there, and you just learn to deal with it day by day, you know. But the thing is, there are no support services either, and you would think, you know, the government knowing all of this, they even gave us an apology in 2009. They admitted it.
Now, it said here in your testimony, Gabriel, that you received a payout, or that may have been from a different. Was that in your story? You received $20,000.
Yeah, that was. There was about 4 or 5 other girls. It was like a class action.
Yeah.
And it was through Toward Healing, and it was back in the late 90s.
Yeah.
But it was kind of, we didn't know much about it at that stage, and we went through these lawyers who did talk us into going ahead with this. But the lawyers took $5,000 out of that, so I ended up with $15,000.
Well, gee, that's...
And I wasn't really going for the money, because when they said that they were going to $7,500, I got up and walked out of the room, and I said, OK. I said, well, if you're going to take that much, I'm not interested in the rest of it.
Hmm.
You know, because to me it was more of a principle. And so I got up and walked out of the room, and then the lawyer came after me, and then she said, look, we'll just make it 5. So I thought about it, and I thought, OK. And at that stage, you know, I did need some money to help my son who was having pilot lessons, because I never had enough to, you know, get my kids a good education and stuff. So I did. I took that to pay for, you know, my kids' education and stuff like that, plus all the chiropractic bills that I had had over the years. You know, getting my neck fixed and my back fixed, and I'd paid out thousands of dollars just to keep my neck in place because it was so bad.
Now, what I would say is interesting about that, Gabriel, of course, the amount of money they paid out is insulting and utterly, utterly ridiculous. But one thing that's interesting about it is that it does prove that they acknowledged guilt. And I think that's something that we really need to seize on. We need to remember that. We need to hold on to that, because the fact that they paid you out at all means they acknowledged guilt, and typically they try to deny it. So let's when we come back from the break, I want to talk more about that. I'm talking to Gabrielle Short about unbelievable horrors. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Talking with my guest, Gabrielle Short, about the abuse and the violation of human rights that took place in many institutions in Australia, orphanages, children who were put in the care of the government or religious institutions. And to me, the stories are so shocking that it is something that, I mean, I often talk in this show about major international events. I've talked a lot about Syria recently, about the violations of human rights that are occurring globally. But when you see a story like this that's right in your own backyard and that it's so buried, it makes you realize that there's probably so much more that we haven't explored, that we haven't exposed, and it needs to be focused on. Gabrielle, you received a compensation payment, as you were saying there in the last section, of $15,000 after costs, a trifling, insulting payment, but one nevertheless which does show culpability on their part. Is there a chance that you could, that now that this has had more exposure, that there could be another class action, or did you waive your right to any further action?
Well, we did sign something, but the thing is it's not binding because it wasn't done through a court.
Aha, uh-huh. That's interesting.
You see, so, I mean, I don't know whether I'm going to bother about it, but as you say, the fact that they did pay that, well, that is an admittance on their part. That's all I needed. What I want to do now, my mission is to get some services, proper assistance, ongoing medical and dental care for all these forgotten Australians that are still suffering the effects. You know, I mean, it's been going on for years, Herbert. So I could probably go back and do that, but at the same time, money doesn't really mean anything to me. You know, I mean, it would be good if we could get redress and justice, but at the moment, a lot of these forgotten Australians, they're all dying off, and no support services in place, although they do have what they call services in New South Wales, Victoria and Queensland. Now, in Victoria, the government funds this organisation to assist forgotten Australians with $2 million a year. Half of that goes into wages, administration and rent. And the other $1 million has to be spread across at least 50,000 forgotten Australians. Well, that works out to about $20 a year. How is that going to improve the quality of life for these forgotten Australians? You know, we really need, you know, some proper ongoing assistance. And at the moment, we actually have a petition out calling on the federal government to provide forgotten Australians with something like a gold card like the war veterans have got, so that instead of having to wait in a queue, all that sort of thing, they can actually register. And, of course, they would have to provide proof, which is through their file, although a lot of people are still having problems getting their file, and then be issued with that card, and that automatically gives them instant access to proper medical care. I mean, that's the least they can do, Herwood, considering, you know, redress and justice seems to be a long time in coming. And by the time that comes, most of these people will probably be dead. I hate to say that, but, you know, a lot of them are dying pretty young. Not many forgotten Australians, you know, are living up into their 70s.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That, you know, I mean, most of them are now middle-aged and older.
Can I just ask, Gabriel, with the inquiry, has the inquiry now concluded and have they produced their final report?
No, no, not yet. I think that's about the 15th of November.
Right.
They will actually publish their final report, and probably in that they'll come up with some findings and put some recommendations forward. And, yeah, we'll just have to go from there. But quite often when they put these recommendations out, they're never followed up.
Right.
So I'm just hoping, I think with the Vic inquiry, you know, I kind of feel a little bit confident because I expected to go in there, sit down across from these stone, cold-faced people, but I actually felt like they really were interested in what we had to say. You know, they really did want to get to the bottom of what has happened.
Well, just reading the transcripts, I got a feeling that that it was a real environment, you know, genuine environment there, and I felt that at least, you know, that was positive, that the victims were able to stand there and give testimony about what happened, because I think that's extremely important. What do you think?
Yes, I do, because it's all documented.
Yeah.
It will go down in history. It will always be there, and people can go to it, read all the transcripts, and they will understand what really happened in, as you said, our own backyard. I mean, this is a dark chapter in Australia's history.
Yeah, and
we're
yes.
going in chapter two now, because another dark chapter in Australia's history, because the forgotten Australians have been left on the roadside, wounded.
Indeed.
No help, no nothing. I mean, you would think, Herwood, knowing all of this, knowing what's happened, you would think, right, let's put some services in place now and help these people in their last remaining years of their life. But no.
Well, my explanation for that, Gabriel, is perhaps a little bit dark and a little bit pessimistic, but I don't think we have solved the original problem yet. I think that,
but the thing is, these victims in the here and now do need some assistance. I mean, that doesn't mean to say we can't, you know, look into other things and, you know, sort of learn from the past. But it's like, you know, somebody comes along and runs you over and they get out and they go, oh, sorry, and they jump back in their car and they keep moving on and leave you wounded on the roadside. You've got to stop and give that person assistance. Well, this is what they've done with us. They've given us an apology, but that's it, Herwood.
Well, my assessment of that is that, in fact, although the impression is given that we've now moved on to another chapter in history, that in fact, that's a little bit of an illusion. In fact, the same, I would put it to you that probably the same type of abuse or abuse on a similar scale is occurring now in a different way, though not exactly in the same way, but it's still occurring. In other words, we have there's a kind of a belief that a lot of people hold that our society is one of the greatest in the world, that it is the best society, and that the past is like some bad, forgotten place, and that now we live in a glorious world of freedom and democracy. And that is just a complete lie. And, of course, that's a lie that I heard as I was growing up, that I've gradually learned to kind of peel back all the layers from and say, no, actually, that we're still living in that terrible, bad world. It hasn't really changed.
The thing is, Herwood, we're just better at covering it up.
That, unfortunately, I mean, yeah. That's
our country, or our governments are better at the propaganda stuff. In a lot of the third world countries, it's more out in the open. But in our country, it's kept hidden away. And yes, it is happening. You know, and that concerns me too, because a lot of these kids are in foster care.
Yes.
Well, who have they got to go to?
And the problem with foster care is that it's going to be very hard to ever really know what happened to these kids in foster care. And there's been quite a few cases that have come out of children who've been sold out for prostitution while in foster care and being horrendously abused. But it's going to be all over the place in all kinds of different ways, and it's probably going to be even harder to find to bring that to the light, you know, to bring that under scrutiny, because it's so dispersed.
And also, too, because what they're doing now, they'll turn around and say, oh, we've now learned from the past, now we can, you know, be better in the future. So when kids do come or do report it, they're going to say, oh, no, that doesn't happen now.
Well, of course,
we've solved that problem.
Indeed.
I can see where you're coming from. It is going to be harder for children to report it. There's going to be even more cover-up.
And, of course, the other big problem today, which probably you didn't have to such a degree, is the compulsory drugging. And what we've seen with kids in care now is that about, I think something like 75% of them, it's a really high figure. I was shocked when I saw it. A really high percentage of kids are drugged, I mean, with powerful psychoactive medications. Just what's your opinion on that?
Well, to me, I believe that's still experimentation. It's like, how can I put it, you know? Well, they experimented on the Jews. Once the war was over, they needed other subjects. Oh, kids in orphanages. Well, the orphanages have now closed down. But now you've got these kids in foster care, behavioural problems. They suffer from, ADD?
ADHD, ADD,
These doctors are diagnosing these children, and the children have no choice because they're in foster care, so they're forced to take these so-called behavioural or control behaviour medication, and they're studying these children.
Indeed. I mean who needs lab rats or rhesus monkeys when you've got kids in care? You can just try out any new drug on them you like. No problem at all.
Yeah. They have become, these pharmaceutical companies have become so much better at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, they're always looking for guinea pigs, and they naturally they're going to pick the most vulnerable children or people. And they're usually children who don't have parents to stick up for them. So these parents that are under the welfare, and the welfare allows it. And I think in my day, it did happen, Herbert. It was a little bit sort of, how can I, it was, well, back then it was more still in the experimentation stage, as in a lot of...
I can believe that,
Well, today it is more common, but... back then, it was more to do with the, you know, the vaccinations.
Ah, right. So there were a lot of vaccines that you were you had to take.
I mean, as you probably know, a lot of these vaccines had the monkey virus. They've admitted that.
Well, there's a lot of problems with many vaccines,
indeed.
Gabriel, unfortunately, we've run to the end of the hour. It's really been. I'd just like to talk to you more. Let's do this again. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you too, Herbert. Thanks for, you know, allowing me to speak out on this.
Absolutely.
So it's good to bring awareness.
Absolutely, it is. And we'll keep doing that at Truth News, I assure you. That's a show for this week.
No worries. Okay,
thanks,
Herbert.
Thanks, Gabriel. That's a show for this week, ladies and gentlemen. You're with Truth News Radio Australia signing off. We'll be back next week. We'll see you then.